Making a recipe that calls for butter? Make it better with European butter from France. With a minimum of 82% butter fat, it's no wonder French butter is the number one choice of chefs the world over. Whether you're whipping up an omelet, sauteing vegetables, or spreading it on toast, the rich, cultured flavor of butter from France always elevates. Be sure to look for Made in France on the label. And for recipes, tips, and tricks, go to tasteeurope.com.
Another funny growing up in New York Japanese story. Went to Nobu for the first time. My Japanese mom, she's like, do you have any white rice that I can just have like a side of with like all this like salty ass food? And they're like, no, we don't. And she's like, but this is a Japanese restaurant, right? So
you're listening to The Taste Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Rodbar. Today on the show, I welcome in James Harris, one half of Throwing Fits, a very funny podcast and online community dedicated to all things menswear. I wanted to invite James in not just to talk about chef fashion, but also to find out about what he's eating and drinking around his hometown of New York City. We also get into these burning topics, Finelli versus Lucien, not getting into gem wine thanks to TikTok, eating fried prawn heads, Japanese food at home versus Japanese food in the restaurants. We also get the Throwing Fits take on Dime Square. A great episode with James, a real one-of-one guest. I hope you enjoy it. James Harris, welcome to the Taste Podcast.
Thank you.
Man, I like Throwing Fits. I'm a fan. I enjoy what you guys do.
Thank you.
For our listeners who don't know, I want to get a little into what Throwing Fits is. It's not just a podcast. It's an online community. You do Patreon and all that stuff. But really, I like it. I'm not really a menswear guy. I wear clothing during the day.
I would hope so.
Yeah. Definitely, I try to.
Call an HR a taste, if not.
Yeah, it would be an issue here at Penguin Random House. But I follow it as much as I want to. But I also think what you and your co-host Larry do is you talk about New York City and LA as places, and food always seems to come into the conversation.
Yeah. I mean, ostensibly, it's a fashion podcast, but like, you can only talk about clothes for so long, especially with other people that maybe aren't as obsessed with it as we are. So that's kind of like the portal entry point into just the larger conversations that we're having with like interesting people or the conversations we're having with ourselves. And like the joke is that it's a visual art form on a audio medium. So like we can't really talk about clothes or like the color blue for that much without talking about.
You're wearing a lot of blue right now.
I'm wearing a lot of blue. It's a blue story.
Yeah.
but yeah. So it's a weekly interview podcast, and then we have our own shit, and then we're like trying to do other things.
Yeah.
In IRL stuff, making our own clothing for the first time, which is an insane challenge and has made me really appreciate how hard it is to make good quality clothing that you actually like.
It's cool that you actually do it. And you can't like clown on bad like brands as
I know.
Much. Yeah.
Well, it's not the critic that counts. It's the man in the arena. So
yeah. Well said. Have you ever done food collabs? Like have you like pitched like Sweetgreen, like doing a collab or any of that stuff?
One of our ongoing dream partnerships for a brand that just needs to give us a ton of money to do it is to partner up with restaurants that we really fuck with and go to frequently enough, and we shout them out enough where like people will literally go there and be like, hey, I learned about this restaurant Throwing Fits.
Yeah, like Bernie's, for example.
Bernie's.
Like Bernie's, you got to have a house account of Bernie's by now.
They do call me the mayor there, or Lawrence called me the mayor there. Shout out Oliver and Rachel, the two maitre d's and managers.
So you're getting like
awesome.
A booth, you're getting like escorted in, like cutting the line, Cedar Point style.
I prefer the best seat in any restaurant is the corner of the bar. Just the best people watching. Yeah. You get to chill with the bartender.
You mean like no backspin, no one behind you. Basically, you can look forward and
Yeah, it's the best people watching. You can actually watch the people at the bar itself. And then Bernie's, it's a nook, which actually I don't know if you know this, but it's the opening. It's where they shot the very opening scene in The Departed.
Yeah.
Before it was Bernie's, but it was like a pizza spot.
Yep.
That was pretty mid.
Yeah, there were some mid spots in Greenpoint. But Greenpoint in general, where you are located, and a lot of your show and your Instagram is based around Greenpoint. It's a great restaurant neighborhood. Yeah.
I was kind of prepping a little bit just because I didn't want to sound like an asshole and be like, all right, what are my top three spots? And realizing that I don't really leave my little bubble of Greenpoint, North Williamsburg, which is maybe something I should work on.
Yeah, is Cool World good? I haven't been there. What's the hot take?
Okay, terrible name.
I mean, it's kind of
decent
not great.
Brunch.
Cool.
They had a beef au jus sandwich, but with a pho broth dip.
Sounds like a French dip.
Yeah, but with like kind of like pho flavors in it. The first time I went, I wasn't really a fan. The second time I went was with all the fellas, the freelancers, our groms, as we call them.
Yeah.
Lawrence and I took them out to Cool World, and we got the off-menu fried chicken,
yeah,
which is fire.
Yeah.
And that was just like a fun like group time. What's crazy, though, is that like no shots at Five Leaves, but I was having brunch there in the window, and it was pretty empty, and it was like we walked right in, no reservation or anything, which is rare in New York now. And people were waiting outside Five Leaves. Like, we sat down, and when we left, people were still waiting that we'd seen, like, pull up, like, that were waiting when we pulled up.
So they're, like, doing real quotes. Because, you know, like, there's the fake quote and the real quote, but they're doing, like, real quotes, like, 3-hour wait, 2-hour wait.
I think it's just, like, on some, like, some European, like, must-hit list or something. I mean, Five Leaves is good, and I'll go there and get a fucking bowl of beans every once in a while. But,
Sounds great. I haven't been there since, like, they opened. It's been a minute.
They're still doing, I mean, they're still doing crazy business, and they're still doing egg and beet on the burger.
Do you go to D&D ever? That was my spot for a while.
Yeah, it's also, I mean, this is kind of like,
say it, James.
My
say
take
it.
On reservation culture.
Oh yeah,
is so fucking out of control. It's so hard to walk in to like a quote unquote regular restaurant, in certain neighborhoods, right? In certain neighborhoods in Brooklyn and Manhattan.
James, we talk about it a lot on the show. We talked to John Bonet, who runs Resy's editorial, and we've spoken with editors at Eater about it too.
I'm not just imagining this, right?
No, you are not imagining this. It's some of the toughest cultural tokens or cultural indicators are the restaurant reservation right now, meaning the most coveted when you say toughest.
Well, yeah, and everyone wants to get in there and put it on their fucking IG story, make a TikTok. But it's crazy, like, the worst thing is when people are, you walk in and they're like, oh, sorry, it's all reservations. You know, like, even at the bar, they're doing reservations for bar seats, which is absurd.
Yeah.
I hate it.
I mean, it's tough. I think on the flip for the restaurant operator, you know, they got to like space out the flow sometimes. Like, their kitchens get crushed. They don't have the staff. That's the flip side.
All right.
You're saying some truths, though. I think a lot of people are frustrated by the restaurant reservation. Why? Go to the small guys. Go to Chinatown. Go to places you can walk in.
Yeah, for sure.
But they're not as cool.
Yeah, I mean, they're just as tasty, but it's also just like, even like neighborhood spots are tough to just walk in. But that's why Cool World is kind of this weird anomaly, because it is like no pun intended, cool restaurant, but you can kind of walk in.
Name's tough.
Yeah.
It's a tough hang.
Tough
okay,
name.
Dr. Taco, that is your Instagram handle. What's the story? Is it a culinary reference or something else?
It's actually, so I lived in Thailand for a year near Chiang Mai.
Sweet.
Just after college, no job, no idea what I want to do.
You fuck with Muay Thai? You box?
I did a little Muay Thai, and it was like truly like in like some old man's backyard where there's like chickens running around, and they're like, the real guys are like getting their shins beaten with metal rods.
Yeah.
And we were just like, ooh, like now we great cardio.
Yeah, right. Getting shredded here.
Yeah. I mean, it was fucking tough, and I would love to get back into it, but I feel like every Muay Thai place in New York, people like, are actually training to fight.
Yeah.
Which I don't really want to do.
No. You want to just hang. So tell me about Thailand. Naked.
So I lived in Thailand, and there's a potato chip brand called Dr. Taco, which I thought was hilarious, and it was pretty tasty. When I got back to New York, and I actually started up an internship where I first met my now Throwing Fits co-host, Lawrence. He was like, yo, you should get on Twitter. I'm like, what? It's like, this is fucking stupid. All right, I don't need like a real name like James Harris or whatever. So I just did Dr._Taco MD.
Okay.
Became known as Dr. Taco, Doc Talk, Taco, whatever.
Yeah.
And then Instagram came around, and I just kept it going. And people think it's like a sex thing.
Yeah.
It's a potato chip thing.
Exactly. I like
even
that.
Better.
I like that even better. Do you ever like get these chips in like mail order style? Do you ever get them?
No, like the Dr. Taco
chips?
No, I don't. This was like literally 14 years ago.
Wow.
So I don't even know if that chip brand is
probably out of business. All right. I want to ask you about the menswear fashion crowd. Like, where are they hanging out? Where are you hanging out right now in Brooklyn and the city?
I think Finelli's is still ground zero.
So Finelli's is still ground zero.
Finelli's is still the one.
Wow.
It's a joke. Like, if you want to, the Stop and Chats are fucking rampant there.
Is
can't escape.
Over Lucian?
Yeah. I'm not really a Lucian fan because, like, again, it's just too hard to get in.
Yeah.
And the food is kind of whatever.
Yeah.
The vibe, I guess, is great. But
right.
That's probably more like art crowd.
Okay. I like the parsing of the crowds. It's nice to hear this.
Yeah.
It's really articulate.
I think right around here, like Rock Center is still trying to become a fucking thing. And like, good luck.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to pay like $25 for some little snails or anything.
Yeah. Monkey Bar is reopening, I heard. Or doing something cool.
I think it's open, no?
Yeah.
I don't know what's happening. There's like a roller skate rink instead of the ice skating rink now. I don't know what's going on. I mean, it's been a minute since I've been up.
Where do you like to hang then in New York? And I'm going to get into some top threes because I really want to get into some of your brain.
I mentioned this, but I'm like not really leaving my little bubble, which I like is like this kind of off near like McGolrick, between McCarran and McGolrick on like this, like, I guess, eastern side of Greenpoint, which is off like the Franklin Ave crazy strip, which is now just Takia Ramirez lines down the fucking
it's
block.
It's crazy to see Ramirez have such long lines.
Dude.
It's good stuff, though.
It's really good.
Yeah.
It's the closest taco in New York without going like deep into Brooklyn or Queens that I've had that tastes similar to something in Mexico City.
Yeah.
But the lines, and again,
it's tough.
It's just
lines are a real crush.
And now after they were like number, I don't know what they were on that New York Times 100 best restaurants
top
in New York.
Top 20, I think.
The lines are always like to the corner. Now they wrap around the corner and go down the block to the next corner.
Damn. Pete Wells actually, I think he did a good job with that list. Did you actually dive into it a little bit?
I skimmed it.
Yeah,
I didn't even really sit down with it. I have been really wanting to go to the number one one.
Yeah.
And like link, I guess, another fucking
Midtown
one.
Absolutely, Tatiana by Kwame Nwashe. Yeah.
Yeah. It looks so good, but now I'm not even going to try.
No, it's a tough reservation. I'm sure you could get in though. Now, okay, what places are super out? Because I think you follow like the trends and the way the ebb and flow of restaurants and bars and stuff.
I don't know. I don't really. This was like a good exercise just prepping for this because I don't really. I don't know if I really like chase like what's hot and what's not, but just like I'll just love a single dish at a place and like as a my OCD will just like make me go back there frequently just to get that one thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really sick and tired of like very expensive, overpriced French brasserie, classique fucking like steamed fish with a cream sauce.
Yeah. Yeah. For like 48. Yeah.
Exactly. I'd rather just get like, I miss just like, I don't know, like really spicy Vietnamese food or something.
Yeah, what the fuck definitely. Is that? Yeah. New York, there's some spot. I mean, Koreatown's got, I went to a place last night that was literally on fire. So I think spice is nice. Now I have to ask, like Balthazar, like you, it's a theme on your show. You guys go there with your gang, with your crew. Are you into Balthazar? Let's be honest here.
Not the food. I think.
Yeah.
Like New York has a ton of places where the vibes are on 10.
Yeah.
But the food is like pretty fucking mid.
Yeah.
And I think Balthazar is right there where it's like, you're gonna have a great time. The lighting's great. Everyone looks good. Everyone's getting fit off. But at this point also, it's, again, just such a tourist place. There's like TikTok girlies.
Mm-hmm.
There's the people that are going there because they saw it on TikTok.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of content being created within those walls.
Yeah.
On that zinc bar.
Yeah.
Lots of like stands and phones being set up.
I mean, the amount of selfie sticks and even tripods at Balthazar, it's crazy. But like the burger's fine.
Burger's
but,
good.
I don't know.
French onion's good. Seafood tower's overpriced.
Yeah. Yeah. But and like just grabbing a drink there with some friends and like maybe getting a fucking bowl of fries or something is good. But for a whole meal, it's just like very mid food, but the vibes are just very high. New York is chock full of that.
What's up with Jeans? Alex Delaney's been on the show. I hear about Jeans. I haven't been yet. Is the food there good or is it just a club?
I don't know if the restaurant's open.
Oh, like, it's not even open.
It's even open. Shout out Benny and Ash. But like, I don't know.
Okay.
I think now there's just a bit where they're like, oh, Jeans not open yet. It's like, all right.
It's almost like it's just a club space.
It's just a club. It's
fair.
It's a good, nice space, good location. Alex and Giavos, when they do Love Club, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, shout out Richmond, Virginia. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that Giavos guy.
But I would love, he's awesome. You should have him on the show.
Yeah.
He has a few restaurants. He has Stella's in Richmond, which looks phenomenal. I think he has one in Charleston as well.
My sister-in-law, Maya, runs a spot named Dynamo down in Richmond. So I have nothing but love for that town.
It's like a little gem of a food town, right?
Yeah. All right, we're going to do your first top three.
Okay.
Top three slices. Let's just go.
Okay. This is hard because my number one, just based off memory, was this place called Frank's on 22nd and 1st. No longer there. It's probably a fucking bank or a Subway or something.
Into the retro, maybe not open list. Good way to do
greasy
it.
Greasy New York slice. It was $1.50 a slice. But right now it's Leo's.
Yep.
Just Leo.
Yeah.
Shout out Joey. I think their potato pie is phenomenal and their chopped salad and beans. And another place it's just like, the rarity where the food matches the vibes.
Yeah.
You can have a great time there. It's loud. It's buzzing. Great wine, great beer, great pies. So Leo, I would say Scars just because just recency bias, just had a Knicks watch party in the back there.
Oh, in that little back space?
Yeah.
Which that's just, kind of a restaurant, but never really one.
Which is just a lot of fun. Like Hugo, this guy, the brand director at Awake New York, he just invited some friends and was passing out Presidentes, and it just felt like an experience you can't really get anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, that back room and the way he like art directs it, it's definitely Scars. You got to give that guy Scars some credit for like creating this mood. Is the restaurant open next door yet?
It's across the street. I don't think it's open yet. Okay. I think that they're still working on it. But from what I hear, it sounds like it's going to be a pretty cool like kind of 1-2 combo.
Yeah. I heard sushi. Is that true? Japanese-ish?
I don't know.
We're doing Plywood Report here, James. We're doing Plywood Report back at Eater 2010. Shout out.
And then I'm not a pizza snob, so I was kind of struggling with this one. But the last time where I like traveled to a different neighborhood to get a slice was probably Mama Two's on the Upper West Side. So fucking good.
Applause. I love that place. I think their Pomodoro slice is one of the top.
Yeah, and I think I only had the grandma slices.
Grandma slices
so
up
fucking
there.
Good.
Great call, James. I knew you'd come with some
thank
spots.
Thank you.
Have you ever met a chef who actually dresses well?
Maddie Matheson. Not just for a chef, but for a big boy, for a big dog.
Yeah.
He puts that motherfucking shit on.
Yeah.
Whether it's like the vintage, thrash vintage tees and gigantic vintage Carhartts, or like he's been doing his suit shit now that he's on the red carpet for the Bear and everything. He's been getting his suit on, and he looks fantastic.
He looks great. Yeah. And he's got great ink. I mean, he looks nice.
Yeah.
Like, his arms, he looks nice.
And just the funniest guy. And then I would say Flynn McGarry of Gem. I can't afford Gem.
Flynn, former guest.
I can't afford Gem. I went once and was like, all right, need to fucking...
Gem Wine? You go to Gem Wine at least?
I can't get in.
Okay.
It's another one of these, like, TikTok places where I think now they're finally open on the weekends.
Yeah.
But maybe when, like... outdoor seating opens back up this summer, which is actually exciting just because it means like more opportunities to like go to places.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll give it a shot, but like it's another one of these places where I'm just like, I'm not going to wait an hour and a half to have a glass of wine.
I know. So what's the Throwing Fits line on Times Square?
I don't know. It's like, it's just white Chinatown. Like it's a funny little phenomenon. I really like Servos. I think Servos is still like one of my favorite restaurants.
Always say that when we talk about Dimes Square with other guests, Servos is always, and Dimes 2 is actually a good restaurant too.
Yeah.
Oh, you pause. I love it, James. You pause.
I've been there a few times and never really was like super blown away. Probably because like an ex-girlfriend was always taking me there and I was just like, all right, like this is okay.
Restaurants are like that. They have a connection to people and you just don't want to build there anymore.
But it's like sitting outside drinking a 50-50 Servos martini and some fucking fried prawn heads, like sopping that butter sauce up with the bread. So when you're sitting outside and the sun's setting and it's going like straight down Canal Street, it's a great fucking time.
Yeah.
I really want to try the new Parcel beer shop too.
Yeah, the retail down there is great. I mean, not just for food, obviously, but there's like stores down there, like Metro stores and stuff.
Great Vintage, Leisure Center,
of course.
Street Rack, Chad just wheels out a rack on the weekends.
Yep.
And right outside La Dive, and he'll just like have awesome stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just like it's a good little area to just like bop around for an afternoon, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's good for out of towners too. We have a lot of out of towners who listen to the show just to come by and hang out down there.
Yeah. In terms of like the Dime Square, like, lore, I'm not really that tapped into like all the newsletters and all the fucking burner accounts and all that shit, so I don't really have time to get into that.
I like that about you obviously have a real strong point of view with food, but you definitely aren't like food media or like nerding out on that shit. Like, you definitely have your own point of view.
I mean, it's just like, just eat what you like. I don't know.
Agree. I want to get into your background. Did you have Japanese food in your home growing up?
Not really. I think because my mom's Japanese, grew up in New York City, and like obviously there's like tons of great Japanese here.
Yeah.
But I don't know. She like always thought that American food is so oily and greasy and heavy. So when she was cooking for us when we were kids, I think she like kind of pared back on that. And then I was lucky enough every summer to travel, my whole family traveled to Japan and like hang out with the family there for like a week.
Amazing.
And so that was really cool.
Amazing. Cool.
Yeah. To like eat fucking sushi as a 7-year-old and like understand and like appreciate it or eat a fucking 7-Eleven ramen and be like, oh my God, this is phenomenal.
So
why don't we have it over
having eel for breakfast. Do you ever have eel for breakfast? Yeah.
Eel for breakfast. My uncle one time came back, he just like caught a fish and came back and just like, we had sashimi with wasabi, just like on the fucking kitchen table that he just caught. So that was cool.
That's cool. So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Stuytown.
Oh, Stuytown.
Well, Peter Cooper.
Yeah, Peter Cooper Village. Yeah. So when you were growing up, did you go to school, high school here too?
Yeah, I went to Stuyvesant.
Name check. There you go. you were one of the down. It's funny. Did you go to school with Ryan Muir?
Yeah.
Photographer?
Yeah, yes, I think so.
Yeah. Right. I'm putting you on the spotlight. Do you know Ryan Muir?
I don't really know that many people from high school, but yeah.
And Dust Races guys.
Yeah. Heems, yeah. Dash.
Yeah, definitely.
Monchi just had his fake going away party.
No shit. He's in LA now?
No, he's staying in New York, but he had a going away party because he was going to move to LA.
Yeah.
He's like, actually, I changed my mind. I'm going to stay in New York, but I am going to go to India for 3 weeks.
Good
he's over
him.
In India now, just chilling. But
that's a great episode. I'll link to the show notes, Heems, on the Taste Podcast. Now, so growing up in New York, okay, this is even a broader question. Were there any Japanese spots that you were going to with your family in New
York? Yeah, there's a spot called Choshi on 19th and Irving.
Are you serious?
Do you know it?
Yes.
So fucking good.
My God. Before Irving Plaza shows, I used to always go to there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like weirdly affordable for where it is.
Oh my.
I don't know. I guess like I had a job working at Sunrise Mart one summer.
Nice.
I was a delivery van driver, which was awesome because I got paid by the hour, but I wasn't supervised. So if I finished all my deliveries, like people would call in over the phone, grocery orders. I would pack up the van, drive around Manhattan, Queens, Brooklyn, drop these off. Mostly like Japanese families.
Yeah.
And then if I got done, I would just fucking find a quiet street, park, take a nap for an hour.
Yeah.
Make an extra $16.
It's the best.
Yeah.
Sleeping, to get paid to sleep. I definitely had jobs in my past.
Yeah. I got towed once, but the owner of Sunrise Mart, I forget his name, but he's a legend. He was like, the policy was like, you got to pay for it. He's like, don't worry, I got you.
Oh, that's nice. That's generous of him. Now, let me ask you this. Growing up and going to all those spots in like Little Japan in the East Village, I feel like Sunrise Mart was almost like Erewhon before Erewhon was Erewhon. And they like kind of missed the boat. They could have been Erewhon.
Yeah, I think. But what's cool is that the guy was like, he still has Sunrise Mart in Industry City now.
Oh, cool.
He's just kind of like, yeah, I don't want to like spread my time. I'm like 70-something. I'm just going to retire and chill. I forget his name, but he's just kind of a legend and like quietly was like the Don of like Little Japan on like East 9th Street.
Yeah.
All the little places on St. Mark's. Another funny growing up in New York Japanese story. Went to Nobu for the first time. I have a rich, eccentric uncle.
Yeah.
Who likes to take out my family when he was in New York when we were kids. And we went to Nobu. And we're like fucking eating the, you know, black cod miso, whatever.
Always, yeah.
My mom is like, hey, my Japanese mom, she's like, do you have any white rice that I can just have like a side of with like all this like salty ass food? And they're like, no, we don't. And she's like, but this is a Japanese restaurant, right? So whatever, shout out Nobu.
That's funny that they would not even do that. So they wouldn't serve you. Were you sitting next to anybody big there at Nobu back in the day?
No, like but my eccentric uncle ordered some fucking expensive scotch. And I apologize to the producers and the listeners for doing this, but he was like, he took a sip and he just goes, and everyone in Nobu just like looks over at us like we're the crazy people. And then later on, they couldn't find my dad's coat. And my uncle, it was for my dad's birthday. So my uncle had bought him a headlamp for like doing shit around that. I don't know what. And so he puts on the headlamp and is going through everyone's like minks and like fucking like
overcoats. This is the eccentric uncle.
This is the eccentric uncle. Wow. He's standing on a chair. He's like pawing through everyone's, you know, multi-$1,000 overcoats and furs with a headlamp on.
I love this guy. Is he still here? Is he still in your family?
He's still kicking it out in Seattle, but he's like a big, like a
crypto
prepper guy.
Oh, he's a prepper guy. Yeah. I was going to say crypto, but probably prepper is more accurate.
But what's crazy is him and his wife was a nurse and she was a nurse and doctor here. She was an epistemologist, I believe, during like the AIDS epidemic in New York. So when she saw that shit happening in China in like January 2020, she sends an email that we were all just like, she's overreacting. Da, da, da. Mm. It was so prescient. And like, it was so like, yo, stock up on toilet paper, medicine, prescription pills that you're going to need. This looks like the big one.
Wow.
And then, we were like, oh, whatever.
Did you actually buy the toilet paper? Or
No,
you like,
fucked up.
All right. Now, you worked at Complex. I wonder, did you cross over with First We Feast and Chris and those guys?
Yeah.
I feel like with like Hot Ones coming out of First We Feast, what a miraculous
crazy
story. What a great, I love Chris. He's such a great guy. Yeah.
And still the same dude he was like, you know, before the ship went nuts. But I was friends with Sean Evans. I actually was one of the, he was a freelancer for a lot of channels, mostly sports, but he would do some stuff for Complex Style, which I oversaw.
Yeah.
Just like more like jokey stuff. And we became friends and he's like, yo, I think they're like offering me this position. I was like, yeah, come to New York, bro. Like,
wow.
Come do it.
Wow.
No, he was still in Chicago.
Wow.
And then Sean is like the goated interviewer and like the amount of research they do is nuts and second to none. But at the time, Lawrence and I actually had a YouTube show called Fashion Bros, where the whole ethos was we'd have on a guest and kind of ask them like left field questions, which now is like pretty standard. But back then it wasn't like, hey, Migos, like, what's your inspiration for the next album? It's like, yo, how much weed do you smoke?
Yeah, yeah.
What's on your Netflix? And it would like kind of actually elicit like human responses, not just like,
well, I love your show Throwing Fits. You do the, I mean, it's that, that's why it's so great. Like, you guys just go in and you do some research, but you also just have great on your feet style.
Yeah, thank you. But Sean and I, we used to be F-Train buddies. We take the F-Train home together.
Nice.
And he was like, yeah, like the show, like, I don't really know if like asking people questions. And I was like, yo, just ask crazy questions. Like, don't ask the questions that everyone else is asking. Ask the questions that you as a person actually would want to know. And then, like, you'll actually connect with them and get it out of them. And now, like, I'm not
You get producer credit here, James? I mean, I feel like there's some, like, producer credit.
John is just the homie. The last time we hung out, it was, like, he invited us to his crib for, like, a fight night.
Yeah.
Ordered, like, an insane amount of Marea takeout.
Yeah.
So.
Wait, that's funny.
That's probably more.
Marea takeout?
The amount of Marea takeout.
That's, like,
of Marea takeout,
too large, probably.
Well, the amount of Marea takeout probably exceeds the monetary value of whatever I would have gotten as a producer.
Sean. I mean, they deserve it all. Those guys worked their ass off for many years. Chris and the team.
Yeah,
Justin.
Chris, Sarah,
Justin. All those guys. Yeah, definitely. All right, next top three. Top three spots. Just for like a good drink with a friend that has a vibe that you just want to feel the vibe.
Oh, man. First up, I think, is A Bar. Do you know this place?
Yeah.
It used to be called No Name Bar.
Yeah. My now brother-in-law owns that spot.
Are you serious?
Like, for real. Yeah, yeah.
Dude, the place is awesome.
I stay above it, yeah.
It's sometimes a fucking hole. It's a shithole, which is what I love about it.
It's a great bar.
But it's also like weirdly classy and like well done. It's just like dark wood. But it's all just metal guys, like crazy fucking face tattoos.
Yep. Sounds about right.
Never crowded, which is great, but always a good amount of people. So there's always like a little bit of buzz, but you can always just walk in and get a fucking bud. Love that place, especially in the summer, because it's like a cool little
cave. Backyard's great. And
great backyard.
I hear through the family grapevine, through the family group text, maybe there'll be some food in the backyard or something.
Ooh,
it's being worked on.
I think I've had like a pretty sketchy hot dog back there when they've had like pop-ups or something.
Yeah, they could improve it, but I think just like, okay, what's the number two spot?
Number two, just because I walked by it today, I was like, oh shit, I can't wait to like start hanging out here, is The Lot Radio. Again, kind of just in my like North Williamsburg, Greenpoint bubble. Yeah. You ever hung out there?
No, I haven't been over there.
It's great. It's just an open fucking lot that they have a shipping container where one half of it, it's just like DJing, and they have like a live stream radio, online radio show, just constantly going. And then the other half is like beer, wine, sake, a few like bites, potato chips, coffee in the mornings. And then it's just this open space with just like a hodgepodge of chairs. They have fire pits going. It's not like twee and millennial and corny.
It's a little like Wild West Brooklyn, like back in 2005 kind of vibe.
And like people are just smoking weed. You can smoke cigs. A lot of times people just BYOB, which is kind of funny.
Interesting. For a bar, that's not the great business model.
But they've like done a good job of like slowly extending out seating. It's like porta potties.
Yeah.
They're building out seating like on the street there.
Do you ever go to The Yard in Gowanus back in the day? It sounds similar. I don't know.
Okay. I don't think so. But yeah, it's just always a fun time and good for a big group. And also like you end up just meeting people and talking to people. So it's a good spot.
Okay, one more three.
Yeah, one more three. Maybe. Okay, I had a few contenders. One was Commodore, just because that's literally the only bar I still go to in my mid-30s. I was going to my early 20s.
And it's still like opened.
Hasn't fucking changed. And the hot breast is still slaps.
It's good. They were like hot chicken before hot chicken. Before like the meme, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Good spot. Good choice. I mean, it's still dark and kind of dingy in there.
Yeah, so like I wanted to kind of maybe do a non-dingy spot, but then I was like, I was like looking around like places I've been recently, Nancy's and Tribeca, but just because that's such an outlier for Tribeca.
Yeah.
And it's such, I only go there when we're like waiting for a table at Frenchette.
Yeah.
So it's like, all right, going to go to a overpriced fucking fancy spot. Let's go to Nancy's beforehand to save money.
Damn, Frenchette. What? That's a tough hang. That's an expensive table right there.
We do business with one guy who has the bat phone there, and not that they like hook it up, but he'll always put it on his company plastic, so like we'll go
then end of story.
Yeah, like, that's why we're still doing business with this guy.
Let's move on. I mean, yeah, and that is part of your business, and the menswear in fashion industry is all about the plastic.
Exactly. And then like a non-shithole, I would say like maybe Four Horsemen, just because it's like just in the window. Again, it's one of those places where it's hard to walk in now, but if you get there early enough or an off hour, you can just sit in the window and like drink some wine.
Yeah.
And some great
James
food.
Is there, you know, just doing his thing.
Sure.
Other James. He's been on the show. We've talked about, I'll link to that one. That's a one from a few years back. Our interview with James Murphy and the chef there who's still, I'm blanking on his name. Place is excellent.
Yeah.
Love Four Horsemen.
There's another spot, Fra Day in Fort Greene.
Yeah.
You know it?
Yeah, I do.
Four Horsemen alum.
Yep.
One of the best steak tartares I've ever had in my fucking life.
Yeah.
I didn't know if it was like, how to classify it, if it was like Italian or French or whatever, but it was.
What? So it's tartare, I think egg, I think really great beef, I think capers, I think maybe shallots or light, mild onion. What it had
some pickled daikon on it.
So it's going that route.
Yeah.
Cool.
Which was like not in like an Asian-y way, and I can say that, but. I can say that, but it was just fucking like very funky and delicious. I don't know.
I mean, tartare when the beef is nice and it's like fatty and you can taste the beef. It's not just cold.
Yeah, so nice. They named it twice.
Appreciate the you doing this research. You were just in LA. I was just in LA. We were messaging back and forth. You got stuck in going to some pretty middle of the road restaurants. It sounds like. So my question is, LA, where do you like to go there?
First and foremost, it's a Maddie Matheson recommendation is El Russo Tacos.
Yes.
In Echo Park.
Yes.
Fucking phenomenal.
Yeah. I mean, wait in line.
Yeah.
Like, wait in line at El Russo.
I've never actually experienced a line there.
Yeah.
Even like a Saturday at like noon or 1 o'clock, which is nice. I mean, not like walking right up, but I think I went there twice in one day the last time we were there.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's a lot. That's a lot of carne asada.
I don't really know. It's like when we're in LA, the schedule is so fucking packed that it's like, all right, we know El Russo, we know it's fire.
Yeah.
That's definitely a must hit. And then it's like in terms of driving around and like experimenting with other taco spots, I would love to do that. And I'm always getting recommendations and ask people recommendations for their favorite taco spot. I'm the doctor after all. But it's just always El Russo, literally number one. And then from there, we don't really have the time. And this past trip fucking sucked because as we kind of bring on more guests of like a higher celebrity caliber, you enter into this fugue purgatory of like nothing's confirmed.
Yeah.
They're going to be fucking late like I was today. Sorry for being on my
all good,
star behavior.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And a little rock and roll there, buddy.
So we fly there and we're like just waiting around the hotel and we can't commit to like going to dinner with friends. We can't try out a new restaurant or like a place we want to go to. We can't drive out to a taco truck because it's like we need to be near the hotel, near the gear, at our action stations. So it's just eating at the fucking hotel.
Oh, brutal.
Which is trash.
So you've channeled the frustration of business travel in LA. I feel like it happens to a lot of our listeners. You've been there for a variety of reasons and you just have to do the work because you're traveling there. But you can't eat the food, which is on SGV or, you know, West Side.
I really want to try Pija
Palace. Yeah. I was just going to say.
How was it?
Great. I mean, lots of great things going on there, including the owner. He's incredible. And I think you should have the guy on your show. He's got a lot of shit to say.
Okay.
Not to produce your show. And speaking of that,
on time.
Have you had any good Throwing Fits food crossover episodes that we should know about?
I guess Maddie Matheson.
Yeah.
He was like talking about the bear before anyone knew what that was. So we were like, what are you talking about?
You're like, was he like, this show actually is going to be good?
He's like, yeah, I got a show. We're like, what? So we didn't really have anything prep for that. Maddie was awesome. I'm trying to think who else. I think it's just like, we always just end up talking food with everybody because everybody has like their favorite spots. If we're in LA, we'd be like, yo, what are the best spots in LA right now? We just had on this fashion editor from Berlin. And we're like, where are we going in Berlin? Mm, and she's like dropping things. And it's like, all right, when I do go to Berlin, I'm going to listen back and take notes. Right now, I have no fucking idea what she's talking about. But I think Maddie Matheson's probably the most. And then I guess Chris Storer, the creator.
You've had him on?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Bear. We've had his sister on, Courtney.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So there was definitely some food talk there, which is like him being the bear and also just a food lover.
Let me ask you this. You're a man of tattoos. And we're working on a story about bad food tattoos. Tell me, what's the weirdest, oddest, strangest, worst food tattoo you've seen in the wild?
Oh, man. When I think of food tattoos, I just think of, like, the stereotypical, like, radish, oyster.
Yeah, those, like, super twee stick-and-poke ones.
Yeah, not even that, but, like, kind of, like, the more traditional American ones. Like, every tattoo era looks so dated at a certain point.
I know.
And right now, like, I mean, the shit I have is going to look dated at some point, fucking stupid. I think.
What are you
going
to do? What's the plan?
Nothing.
Nothing. Cover up.
Keep hiding them.
Yeah, keep hiding them. Yeah,
get more. Lean into it. Yeah. I don't know. But like the traditional American ones of like chef's knife, like fucking a turnip.
Yeah, primals of the cow. You know,
all exactly. Like the fucking the pork cuts.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of this weird like whiskey and boots era of masculinity in the early 2010s.
It's pretty funny. Eliza's working on a story for Taste, and I'm going to link to that if it's live by the time we do that. Now, let me ask you, you guys, when you open your show, you always talk about what you're wearing, but you also talk about what you're drinking, which I appreciate. The fact that you're thinking about the, what your beverage is, that we do this show many times a week, and we don't actually talk about the water or the water or the water we're drinking. Because
the Diet Pepsi.
You got Pepsi, Diet Pepsi, well, nice choice. What drives you to think about your beverages?
I don't know. I think like during the pandemic, we were definitely boozing more on the pod. And that was kind of just a fun way of like, oh, like I got this wine and the wine guy at the wine store said it's this like shit from Portugal and da 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 da. Nice. So just like another, again.
Yeah, Vino Verde energy.
Yeah. Just a portal of entry into a conversation. And I think like with food and drink and style and how you like present yourself or how you consume, there's definitely similarities. And also with cooking, especially. I think when we talk about like what the guest, I mean, usually it's pretty boring. It's like, all right, we're drinking tap water.
Yeah.
The guest wanted the seltzer.
Yeah, you get some, but you go into like, you know, sparkling water, seltzers. To me, it's not boring.
I think bottled water cultures is like snobby bullshit, but I don't know. I think that it's important to like kind of keep levity of like the fact that, we're an online podcast and mainly online community, but like linking up with the homies to like grab a drink or something is still like everything should still be rooted in like the real life actuality.
Yeah.
And not just only existing online.
Right. And just having like you're talking about emojis and shit. Like, I mean, it's like real life shit is like
we want Modelos with the fellows and buds with the buds.
Yeah. I like that. Speaking of buds with the buds, last top three group hang New York.
Ugh,
three spots.
Tough.
Yeah, I know. I'm putting you in the spot. You're doing a good job, though. Appreciate it.
I mentioned Servos. I still think that that's, like, one of the for-real go-tos. Like, if someone's visiting, that's, like, a must-hit. Although, it's kind of hard with a big group.
Yeah, so that's the question, right? So, we're going 6+. Maybe Resi isn't working, because 6+ is hard on Resi, even for a Tuesday.
I would do Hot Pot, maybe, like, Peking Duck, just some classics.
Oh, Peking Duck House?
Yeah, Peking Duck House. My favorite big group spot in Chinatown closed down during the pandemic was called Senor. It was actually in Indonesian.
Okay.
In like, a restaurant, or a restaurant basement.
Yeah.
Bernie's
is
still my number one.
That credit, the house credit's really getting upped right now.
Oh, yeah.
These references.
Oh, yeah. Great. Yeah, worth the wait, even though, again, like, the line's crazy.
Nah, I love it.
And then I guess another place that's great for a group is Astori Seafood. Have you been there? Just like showing up, picking out your seafood what you want, and it's like, all right, you want it fried, roasted, blackened. Like it's pretty simple, but it's just a great fucking time with a bunch of people.
And getting out to the borough too, outer borough. Yeah. You said Astoria Seafood?
It's an Astoria Seafood. Yeah, it's like not, it's pretty south Astoria. So it's not too deep into Queens or anything.
Absolutely.
At all.
What are you cooking these days yourself?
Usually pretty simple, just like salmon.
Really?
My doctor's
that's
like,
the health. Like,
my doctor told me I had high cholesterol, but I think it's because I had drank coffee before my blood test.
Are you on statins yet?
I started, but I went off
5 mg.
I don't know.
Okay.
The generic shit because I've terrible health.
Like what's the dose though? Like,
oh, I don't fucking know.
Okay, big. Is it horse pill or is it like tiny pill?
Tiny.
Yeah, so you're doing like 5 mg. I mean, there's a time in a man's life or a woman's life that you get on the statins.
But I stopped taking them because I'm convinced, I'm pretty sure that I drank coffee before my blood test, and that's why my shit was so fucked, because I didn't know that I was taking a blood test.
Oh, yeah.
So I stopped, and I'm going in tomorrow morning.
Ooh, the fast is on.
I have a reminder at 7 a.m. to not make any coffee.
Yeah.
So I will be fasting and grumpy.
Yeah.
And so it's been salmon over like rice with some Japanese pickles and like a roasted veggie.
Like that.
On the weekends, I'll just take kind of like whatever's left over in the fridge and do like just chop up whatever vegetables and make like a pasta sauce. I've been doing a lot of Salad Freak.
Oh,
shout out Jess.
Yeah, Jess, guest of the pod. She's been on the show. She's great.
I'll try to make like, I guess you'd call it meal prep, just like, all right, one for tonight, one for tomorrow, but I'll end up just eating both servings.
That's, I mean,
be out of shit out of luck.
It's truly the worst thing about meal prep is like, I want to go like 1.5.
Yeah.
And then I got half left and the half doesn't work.
And then I'm like, wait, I just ate 2 pounds of Brussels sprouts. Am I going to be okay? Like,
because you can't stop because it's good. And it's like in the moment, I'm with you. I know what that means.
And then I did get sucked into the TikTok chef abyss.
Yeah.
By this guy, Laurent Dejeuner.
Oh, wow.
Do you know him?
No. Yeah, the TikTok chef thing is interesting. I mean, it's definitely obviously...
Laurent Dagenet. See, oh, there okay. he is.
There he is.
Check him out.
Yeah, I'll check him out. So you're actually cooking from his recipes?
More just like taking a screenshot of what he posts in his caption and just kind of like figuring it out myself. Yeah. But like watching it like once or twice. But he's doing it in a way that's like actually makes it look very fun. And I know that sounds incredibly corny.
Nah, I follow it. Do you follow Pierce Abernathy at all?
I don't really follow any food people because then I just get too fucking hungry watching, like, scrolling.
I respect that.
Yeah.
James, we asked all guests on Taste Podcast if you could write a cookbook or food culture book without the burden of time, meaning you have no deadline, or the burden of budget, meaning you have all the money in the world to create this book. James, what would that book be?
I'm sure this has been said many, many times, but again, going back to my year in Thailand and the amount of, like, street food there, which is like literally just that's what you eat for every single meal. Just like going to that market or whatever, just every market or as many markets as possible throughout Thailand, the north of Thailand, Indonesia, just that whole region. And just kind of like, I don't know, I think it would be better just to have them like, well, that had to have them do the work,
right.
Have them write out the recipes. Cause like, I'm not going to fucking be like, oh, and then I experienced this, like,
no,
I befriended this guy who made the best lek hang I've ever tasted. And he would always give me extra fish balls and just let him tell his story and like get him paid, I guess.
Oh, so you're like altruistic and you're giving them some of the money.
I would suck Random House dry and by giving them as much money as the author, the American author, would get paid as well. So everyone just makes the same amount of money.
Respect that, James. Yeah. I appreciate it. I think a Southeast Asian cookbook is in your future.
Southeast Asian, yeah, for sure.
James Harris, Throwing Fits, thank you for joining the Taste Podcast.
Thank you.
The Taste Podcast is hosted by Eliza Abarbanel and me, Matt Rodbar. The show is produced by Shalia Harris and Pat Stango and edited by Clayton Gumbert. Theme music by Steve Rydell. Visit Taste online at tastecooking.com and make sure to subscribe to our newsletter for updates on all cool things that are happening.